So there's this chap, and he goes into the pub with a grey heron under his arm. Quite unusual, isn't it? You'd expect it to be a duck, but I've changed the joke around a little bit to make it heron feature. You see, clever. Yes, he walks into the pub with this grey heron under his arm, and the landlord says, he says, where did you get that? And the grey heron said, well, I won him in a raffle. Okay, let's steer away. Another terrible one here for you. There's a sparrowhawk and a blue tit, and they go into McDonald's. Blue tit goes to the counter, says to the chap behind there, he said, I'll tell you what, he said, can I have a Big Mac, large fries, and chocolate milkshake as well, please. And the chap serving says, there you go, sir. He said, what about the sparrowhawk? Is he not hungry? To which the little chum says, he said, do you think I'd be stood here if he was? Yep, terrible jokes mean that only one thing. You're listening to Bird Pod. Hello, and you're listening to Bird Pod, the weekly bird watching podcast, written and presented by me, Neil Baxter. If you want more information about Bird Pod, check out the official Bird Pod website at www.birdpod.webs.com. Without further ado, here is Artificial Bird of the Week, the Goldfinch. And one more. That, of course, being the Audubon musical bird toy with authentic sounds, available from the RSPB website, also available from my, not available from my website, a link available to take you to the RSPB one, from my website, www.birdpod.web.com. Okay, you've heard that a few times now, but how accurate is it? Let us find out. Courtesy of the RSPB's Bird Finder. And let's see, what have we got here? We have got golden plover, golden pheasant, golden oriole, goldfinch. There we go. Love this thing. So this is what the authentic version is. I'll tell you what, it's not the toy version. It's not far off the real thing, is it? Okay, so this week it's all about the grey heron. But before we talk about that, let's first have birding news, which is stories that I find of interest, particularly available on the internet. This one, published 18th of June, this is from the Peter Lee Mail website. Birds rescued from roof. Firefighters were called twice in 2 days to bird rescues. Hartlepool Stranton Fire Station went to Brenda Road, Hartlepool, last night, where a crow had become stuck in a chimney. The flustered young bird was trapped behind a metal basket on top of the chimney, and firefighters were called by the RSPCA for help. Firefighters were at the scene at 7:45 p.m. and removed the cage on top of the terrace house to free the bird. Watch manager Andy Robinson said it flew off chirping merrily. Just 2 days earlier at 12 p.m. on Monday, firefighters were called to Frederick Street on Hartlepool's headland, where a seagull was dead on a nest on the roof of a terraced house. Two chicks were rescued from the nest and passed to the RSPCA. The fire officer said, we do get the odd animal rescue at times. Last month we had a bird stuck behind a fire, but to have two on the roof in the space of a couple of days is pretty rare. And I like that story because it's nice to see that animals do get cared for. A lot of people think that they don't, but that story says the opposite. So nice one to everybody involved there for saving these birds. This next story is from BBC's website, it's Earth News, and this is the 17th of June. 2,500-year-old bird's nest found. A 2,500-year-old bird's nest has been discovered on a cliff in Greenland. The nesting site is still continually used by geofalcons, the world's largest species of falcon, or falcon, if you want me to be posh. I'll say falcon, can't help my accent, and is the oldest raptor nest ever recorded. Three other nests, each over 1,000 years old, have also been found. Yeah, give up with that. one of which contained feathers from a bird that lived more than 600 years ago. However, ornithologists fear climate change may soon drive the birds from these ancient nesting sites. Geofalcons live circumpolar to the Arctic. The birds range in colour from being almost exclusively white in Greenland to usually black in Labrador in Canada. Like many falcons, they do not build nests out of sticks and twigs, but typically lay eggs in a bowl-shaped depressions. They scrape into existing ledges or old nests made by other birds, such as ravens. But while stick nests are often frequently damaged, preventing their repeated use, geofalcons will often revisit some ledges and potholes from year to year. To find out just how long the birds return to the same site, ornithologist Kurt Burnham of the University of Oxford, UK, and colleagues decided to carbon date the guano and other debris that birds leave at various nest sites around Greenland. The cold, dry climate of Greenland slows the decay of the falcon's droppings, and various nest sites had built up levels of guano almost 2 metres deep. But Burnham was still surprised to find out just how old these nests are. Carbon dating revealed that one nesting Kangerlussuaq, blimey, try saying that if you were drunk, in central West Greenland is between 2,360 and 2,740 years old, the researchers report in IBIS. Three other nests in the area are older than 1,000 years, with the youngest nest site being first occupied 520 to 650 years ago. These ancient nests are still being regularly used by geofalcons. While I know many falcon species reuse nest sites year after year, I never imagined we would be talking about nests that have been used on and off for over 2,000 years, said Burnham. Within the nests, Burnham's team also found intriguing clues as to the past inhabitants. In the 13 nest sample, they found three feathers belonging to previous tenants. The youngest came from a bird residing in the nest 6 years ago, while the oldest came from a falcon that used the nest some 670 years ago. The ancient guano samples also gave an indication of what the birds ate in times long past. Those geofalcons living in central West Greenland, which is farther from the ice sheet and nearer the ocean, fed from a diet much richer in marine animals such as little auks and black guillemots. Falcons living further north, closer to the ice fed on fed on terrestrial prey such as rock ptarmigan and Arctic hare. These findings put new emphasis on just how important nest site characteristics can be for raptor species, particularly large raptors, Burnham says. Something, be it nest ledge depth or the amount of cliff overhang above the nest, is so attractive at these locations that geofalcons are reusing them for thousands of years. Yet, the fact that geofalcons remain faithful to certain nest sites for hundreds of generations suggests that they may be especially vulnerable to climate change, says Burnham. As a result of a warming and ameliorating climate, other bird species such as peregrine falcons are moving north. As peregrine populations continue to increase in density, they will likely use more and more of these traditional geofalcon nests, forcing geofalcons to find alternate locations to nest in, which may not offer the same amount of protection from the harsh Arctic environment in Greenland. Similar studies have been used to show when whole colonies of birds first took up residence at certain sites. By carbon dating solidified stomach contents, peat moss deposits and bone and feather samples from various molting sites, researchers have in the past shown that colonies of snow petrel have returned to the same site for 34,000 years and Adelie penguins for 44,000 years. Little bit long-winded, that one, in part, so thanks for stopping with me, but no, just interesting to see that they can date these things. So that was interesting stuff. As I said, a little bit long, but I can't abbreviate. But this one doesn't need abbreviating, quite a short story. No date to this, but this is from One India, .in. So .in must be for India. So yeah, I worked that out myself. So let me see. Man who can make the sound of 50 different birds. Okay, a ventriloquist is meant to entertain people. But what is that you expect out of him? Entertainment, right? Well, meet a Chinese ventriloquist who has found his own way of entertaining people. He entertains with voice. No, he is not a singer, nor he does the humming. But with his exceptional voice, which lets him imitate the sounds of 50 different birds, you can be sure of one thing. that he will sweep you off your feet. Zhu Mingfu, 53, who first learned ventriloquism 5 years ago in Beijing, likes to imitate birds and he is even trying to follow their eating habits, report China Daily. So, what goes behind such a performance? Hours and hours of practice, the man is said to spend 3 hours each day to practice the chirping sounds of various birds. He has also stopped eating meat in order to keep his voice pure and revealed that he also likes to amuse people. Slightly weird story, haven't it? But it was dedicated for you. Yep, so that's been birding news for this week. Hope you've enjoyed that. And now, next subject, we're going to talk about the grey heron. Particular favourite of mine, this bird, I have to say. What do I like about them? I'll tell you what I do like about them. I like going out somewhere with my binoculars and or my telescope. And while other people are looking around for any kind of rarities, and if I don't see any, if I see a heron, I'm made up. I just love watching these. The way that they just poise there, just looking for the prey. And they just, I don't know, they just look brilliant. You know, they're like the hitmen of the bird world. They'll just stare, they'll be motionless, they'll just be so intense looking. And then suddenly you see them, poof, head first, dirt. Aerodynamically, they look perfect. I used to be pretty scared of them, though. As a kid, you'd see these things taking off, and I think, for me, it's the nearest you get to seeing a pterodactyl. Especially in flight, they're weird-looking things to see them with the head and the neck tucked back as they fly across, but now the more I think about it, very graceful and very beautiful birds. Also the bane of many a fish owner. Well, let me see, my job is as a community nurse, so I go out visiting people in their own homes. And, you know, very often you do get chatting to people about their hobbies, you know, trying to get that therapeutic relationship and just basically showing interest in people and the hobbies. And you see a lot of people who make bird tables and they keep birds in the garden, and some people who keep fish. And one chap was telling me about his koi carp, mentioned herons and absolutely couldn't stand them. Because try as he might, he'd had various things, you know, meshes over the top of it, all this kind of thing, to keep them out, but they keep coming back. Whereas myself, I don't know, I know these koi carp and stuff are very expensive and must be devastating to see them getting eaten, but if that was me, I think I'd be rushing out with a camera trying to get a photograph of them eating them. You know, in fact, call me cruel, but I'd even like the thoughts of stocking a pond up just for the herons. How expensive that would cost, I don't know, but maybe at some point I'll have a word with the RSPCA and the National Lottery, of course, to see if this is feasible. So there we are. So that's why I like herons. Anyway, let's have a see. What do they sound like? Now that for me is quite novel because although I've seen them on numerous occasions, I've never actually heard one. Not regardless at all. I've crossed between somebody being sick and cheated off the set. The size and films there. Okay, let's read a bit of the information across it. So this is the grey heron, Latin name Erdia cinerea, the family of bitterns and herons, Diadae, if you want the full Latin-y thing, I don't know if I've said it right. Okay, it's the largest European heron. It can stand with neck stretched out looking for food or hunched down with its neck bent over its chest. In flight, it holds its neck retracted and has large rounded wings. It is usually solitary, although several birds may feed fairly close together. It stalks its food, often standing motionless for some considerable time. It usually feeds close to the bank or shore, but may wade out into shallow water. Where to see them? Wetland marshes, gravel pits, reservoirs, lakes and rivers and estuaries. Usually seen standing silently at the water's edge, waiting for prey. Will come to gardens with ornamental fish ponds and fish farms. When to see them? All year round. What they eat? Mainly fish. Estimated numbers, UK breeding, 14,200 nests. And this is in the green status. You know, if you check on these things, it's red, green and amber. Obviously, red being the more rare birds, but herons seem to be doing okay. And finally, last bit about the heron. I've sometimes consult this book for folklore and other bits of information. This is Birds Britannica by Mark Cocker and Richard Mabey, an excellent book for dipping into. So this will tell you about the grey heron, some of the nicknames it gets throughout the country. Frank, which is mainly northern England. Hernza, Old Frank, East Anglia. Johnny Crane, Lancashire. Hegri, Hergri in Shetland. Heronshaw, Bedfordshire and Cambridgeshire. Norrie the Box, which sounds weird, its Gaelic equivalent is Sileitna Boteg. I think, oh, I can't even say that. And Julie the Bogs, I'm not even going to try and say what that one is. Struggle with that. Oh, this is interesting. At least the heron doesn't seem very edible, which is good, and he's a vegetarian. Don't think I'll ever be tempted by one. The heron's fish diet suggests that eating its flesh requires a strong stomach. Brian Vesey Fitzgerald wrote, I have eaten heron and found it a loathsome experience, while W.H. Hudson reported that it was tough and had a nasty taste. Yet earlier palates were completely unfazed. A 16th century commentator thought bittern not so hard of digestion as is a heron, but also noted that a young heron is lighter of digestion than a crane. Well, there we are. Roast heron was especially relished at state banquets and ceremonial occasions. Ooh, good grief. Let's see. Lord Carnarvon's friends at Pixton, now Otherswood, Somerset, ate them skinned, stuffed and roasted like her, with strawberries and cream to follow. And up to at least 1896, the young were largely shot for eating on Romney Marsh. I'm glad to see that don't go on anymore. Or I hope it doesn't. And there's a picture here of a plastic heron. Actually, I've heard this before. Pond owners occasionally put out plastic herons to deter the real thing from coming to eat their fish. Unfortunately, the sight of one heron can actually act as a lure to its neighbours. Yeah, I've heard of that a few times, whether or not they think it's a potential mate. This is interesting, a little bit about why they're so successful. Awed and envious of the heron's capabilities at catching fish, humans have sought various explanations for the success. These include the notion that the heron's powder down is luminous, allowing it to fish by night, or that the bird exudes a fish-attracting oil, or that hairs on the heron's legs play in the water and entice the fish, or that they shake their body scales onto the surface to act as bait or wriggle their toes to simulate worms. Some thought they could harness the heron's gifts by utilising its body parts. In The Complete Angler, Isaac Walton suggested that any bait anointed with the marrow of the thigh bone of a heron is a great temptation to any fish. Unfortunately for Walton's theory, there is no marrow in a heron's thigh bone. Well, that's scuppered then, isn't it? All this talk of killing and eating them, this is interesting. It says, although the grey heron has enjoyed full legal protection for decades, the wish to neutralise its fishing prowess has not diminished. However, a government authorised licence is now required to shoot individual birds, and this is only granted where serious economic loss can be proven, a condition that disqualifies all except fish firms and similar establishments, which I think is pretty fair comment, because I know this happens with cormorants as well. I find it shocking to think of anybody killing birds, but, you know, if that's in a specific area and it's for, I don't know, economic and agricultural reasons, surely it's been well thought out, so, you know, not pleasant, but I suppose it has its practicalities. But just glad to see that people can't just wander around with a gun going blowing these poor birds up left, right and centre just for the fun of it. Ah, now here's some more stuff on how to deter them. So let's have a see. More high-tech methods marketed by one company included a ghetto blaster wired up to a photocell, which triggers a loop tape of the grey heron's alarm call, prefaced by a recording of dustbin lids being clashed together. An album I've not got, I have to say, although I do like a lot of thrash metal, but let's not get into that. A less successful technique is the deployment of life-size model herons, based on the notion that herons are territorial and will be discouraged by a rival. In practice, herons are often communal feeders, and the presence of a plastic lookalike only serves to alert another bird to a potential food source. So there we are. That's a little bit of fact about the heron. Where have I seen them? All over the place. Martin Mear, love seeing them flying down the canal very often. And we had one in the park the other day. And again, sometimes you just don't even notice they're there. And I think that's what give you a good eye for bird watching, when you're scanning the water and you just suddenly make out something and you have a look across and there it is, grey heron, might not move, might have no intentions of moving at all, but you see it there and it's a great spot. I just love seeing them. Yep, I think they're absolutely excellent birds. They tend to keep themselves to themselves. They're always away from people, or they seem to be, unless you accidentally creep up on one and make the poor beggar jump. But no, great creatures. Okay, anyway, that's me finished with another bird pod for this week. Thank you for listening. Of course, if you want to hear more, go to the website www.birdpod.webs.com, or if you want to email me, that's birdpod@hotmail.co.uk. So that's it for this week, and before we go, one last do with the artificial bird of the week, the goldfinch. So here we go, and I'll leave you with this.